Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to episode 59 of the First Exchange Podcast with me, your host, Lydia Daydahl. We are back and I am enjoying having all these guests come into the studio and I hope you are too. I was joined today by a very special guest. I was delighted to be joined by David Patrick Farrell, who is a wonderful poet, creative writer, spoken word enthusiast, who is also the host of My Poems podcast. You may know David from Instagram. He has all these wonderful videos of all his poetry, all his spoken word pieces, and just talks about real life, real issues, himself, the world around him, his experiences. And just I had to get him in just based off of his background in poetry. But when he came in, he was so open and so honest, and he spoke about all of his troubles with addiction, drug and alcohol addiction, being clean, being part of a 12-step program, how he found sea swimming and this new kind of lease of life. So it was really fantastic to hear him share his story. And also alongside his poetry and spoken word and creative writing, you may know David as the infamous Portmarnock beach swimmer who was arrested a short while ago for breaking the 5k limit. So we got him in to talk about. He was actually in court today, so we got to speak about his experiences with that, which is a wild story in itself. So really great chat with David, and I think you're really going to enjoy it. Before I let you go and enjoy the episode, just a quick thank you as always to everyone who listens to the podcast and who shares the podcast. That's the most important thing. If you've got a friend or a family member who you think might enjoy the podcast, please send it on and tag us on social media. I love seeing all your posts and responding to your little, hey Lydia, I love the podcast. So thank you so much. Please don't stop. But without further ado, I'll let you enjoy episode 59 of the First Exchange podcast with poet David Patrick Farrell. Welcome, David Patrick Farrell.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for coming into the First Exchange podcast.
I'm enjoying it. I listened to two of them last night, actually. Paddy Douglas's and Teddy's.
Yeah.
So enjoyed them.
Well, you sent me a message last night saying that you went to school with Teddy, is that right?
Yeah, Teddy was a couple of years ahead of me in school. I always knew he was talking about the art, and I knew he was good at art and skill, so yeah. I always enjoyed art myself, so I knew Teddy was always very good at the art.
That's, I love those little kind of things, you know, where they link people together. And it's funny, obviously, Paddy Douglas is a relation of yours.
No, Paddy's just my mate.
Is he not?
Yeah, that's what Shane said as well.
I think you told me.
Spreading gossip around here.
Yeah.
Are you not cousins?
No, I'm not his cousin, no. He has cousins, Farrellys, but I'm Farrell.
Oh, you're Farrell.
Very, very good mates with his cousin.
Gary.
Alan. Alan Farrell is a very good name with. It's all close, mate.
This is why we need your support, public, so that we can hire a researcher so I'm not in this pickle every week. But you're a very good friend, Paddy, but he was here a year ago on the podcast.
Very interesting, which you're talking about, COVID. You're like, yeah, just look after yourselves. And it was just a funny time.
Take your vitamin D, you'll be all good. Little did we know, eh?
A year in, my God.
God, quickest, but also longest year ever.
Oh, I had a great year. Really, really did. Like, it didn't affect me that much.
How did you have a good year? What did, explain why it was a good year for you.
What my year entailed was, so last March, when it started, I had long hair, funny enough, and we got my housemate to shave it off, and within 10 minutes of my head being shaved, I wrote a poem, and then I wrote another poem, and then my poetry just kicked off, and I was like, it's all over social media, then my poetry just out of nowhere. As soon as the hair was lifted, I'd gone, shaved off, metamorphosis, total change, and then I started writing poetry. Insane.
Slow that down. Yeah. Okay, so long hair. How long are we talking here?
Top knot material.
Yeah. Right, okay.
Yeah, I had a big, massive beard and a big, massive top knot I had for years.
Right. So at what was the sort of the premise for shaving it off? I want, you want to change? Just like, let's have a buzz?
Yeah.
What
was it? I was like, but no barbers were open. I was like, you know what? I'm just going to get to shave this off.
And yeah.
Because I had a top knot since I went before to Australia. And no, didn't have to change already. It came about. Because I was a year sober at that stage. And then the head shaving and then the poetry. And then just since then, it's another roller coaster, another year. I was just ups. Ups. Last year's been brilliant for me. Like,
well, glad to hear it.
Yeah.
Can we talk about sobriety? You mentioned sobriety there.
Yeah.
What is sobriety to you?
Sobriety for me now has nothing to do with alcohol or drugs. Sobriety for me is internal happiness, being content and peace of mind.
Mm-hmm.
So internal happiness is I'm happy with who I am as an individual. Peace of mind, being content is happy with where I am in life. And then being content or being at peace of mind is having both. So that's sobriety for me.
Okay. And what took you away from that over the years? Or where were you before you found that sort of peace of sobriety?
Where was it before sobriety? I was a raving lunatic. The boy I sobered up was I was awake for 5 days at the stage on another binge. I talked about this on the podcast with Paddy Douglas, and it was on his podcast. And so I was taking drinking drugs from a very young age, 11, 12, 13, drink cocaine, speedies, whatever it may be. My 16 years of on it, like insanity. But then towards the end, it became every day for about 2.5 years. I was taking like copious amounts of cocaine, like loads and loads of cocaine. Like, I can't even explain how much cocaine I was down. Like, it was insane. And then stopped working. And I was awake for 5 days at this stage, and I turned around to my friend. I was like, why is this that happened again? Like, how am I to lose another job? I didn't care. And I got this, I became worried, because I was worried that I wasn't worried, if that makes sense.
Yes.
I was so numb, and I got that feeling of, why do I feel this way? Why do I feel nothing? And not because of the drink, because of the drugs, of being numb. But I then thought back of, have I ever felt anything? And I realised I was so numb for the last 16 years. And just this spiritual awakening and this 5 day session of being awake, felt so empty, so drained, so numb, and I realised I'd never actually been happy or sad or any feel emotion. And then I went home, slept for 24 hours, woke up, was like, this can't happen again, because I never got session depression, never got the fear, never got suicidal. I just had no feelings. And then I went home, sobered up, Googled online for 12-step meetings, found a meeting, and since then, massive, massive change.
Well, there's a lot in that.
A lot in that, yeah.
There's condensed. A lot in that. They're very, very condensed. Do you mind talking about it?
No, delving into
it, because I'm very enamoured by anyone who has come from any type of addiction and conquered it, you know, and it not only has conquered it, but is able to see it in their hands and look at it and dissect it and wonder why. That's... awakening or enlightenment that you had on those 5 days, what do you think that was, or who do you think that was?
Wow,
I've
delved into it to a degree. Through the 12-step program, they ask you to find a God of your own understanding, and my God of my understanding is every morning I have my morning routine. I say, we do my 12-step program, I get down on my knees and I pray. And now, talking to, funny enough, Paddy's cousin Alan about when I talk about praying, so I get on the ground, get on my knees and I pray and say, an attitude of gratitude. And when I'm saying the prayers out loud, who hears the prayers?
Yeah.
I hear the prayers. So am I my God, my own creation? Do I create this for myself? You create your own reality. So I'm not saying, we all are gods. We all create our own reality.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I kind of look at things. I don't try and find the insight. I don't try and dissect it too much, because it's too mass to understand.
Yeah.
But I know there's a higher power greater than me. I know that I couldn't have got sobriety without finding this higher power and a God of my understanding. So I don't bring it to religious terms. I just bring it to everything in nature, life, smiling, laughing, that everything is around me is just bigger than I'll ever understand.
Yes. You say that beautifully, because it is that understanding that we are the universe. The universe is in us, and we are these, you know, we are a shining mirror, a reflection of how great the universe is, or how great your God is, whatever that understanding of the word is. How do you feel, or have you ever been faced with somebody who has more of an atheist belief system?
Yeah, I have met people like that, and I don't truly believe people are atheists to a degree. I don't believe.
Well, a guru of mine, Paul Check, wonderful man who I don't know personally, but I like to think that I do. he always says that he does a podcast called The Living 4D with Paul Check podcast. And he says, first, to not believe in something, you have to believe that it once has existed.
Exactly. So you're going against something that's, yeah.
Exactly. So for people to say that God doesn't exist, you first have to believe or accept that he did exist, you're for you to deny it, which is a fantastic, yeah. You know, I wish the pubs were open, because I only found this nugget in the last couple of months. I was like, get the pubs open. This is a great, you know, this is a great debate or a great debate opener. But carry on. So you've been faced with people. Have you been telling your experiences to people?
Oh, I really have. That was one of my biggest things for me. Like, very therapeutic to be able to vocalise all my experiences. And at the start of this podcast, you asked me, is there anything you don't want to talk about? I openly talk about everything that I've been through, all the ups and downs and the insanity of my life and what I went through and where my life was going, and the people I was around with, heavily involved in criminality, and my life was only going one way, and I was getting there very quick. And to be able to openly talk about this, to show people my experience, strength and hope, and then they don't have to go as far as I went, but I had to touch the wet paint. I always do touch the wet paint, go as far as I can. Until then, I know, I learn the lesson myself, you know, kind of way.
That's how
I learn. That's what my experience, strength and hope, I've helped people. Like, through my poetry, through vocalising all of it so openly, people have reached out to me and got sober. They came down to the beach with me, they're still sober. Because they know that I'm being open, raw, real, honest, that they're going to get an open, real, raw and honest answer back.
Mm-hmm.
So there's nothing that I don't shy away from. All my life is what it is. I have been that person. I've done all the things I've done. I've looked at it, I've owned it, and now I'm moving forward and I can share it for the betterment of other people, so they don't have to go that far.
Mm-hmm. Before we talk about your sort of transition to sea swimming and this sort of outdoor life and this newfound love for the outdoors, super interested in where you think or how you think your addiction developed. Are you able to pinpoint a moment, what you were looking for in drugs, in alcohol, and in seeing that, have you been able to find, you know, close up the hole, I suppose?
Yeah, that's a great show. It's funny enough, I just got an epiphany the other day about that. But what I believe addiction is, the opposite of addiction is connection. So when you're addicted, you are detached and disconnected from everything, from reality. And then when you get out of addiction, you get connection, I believe, to the source or your higher self or whatever it may be. So when I started drinking at, we'll say once a week at 11, and then I got pumped out at 12, and then drugs at 13, I was lacking in some sort of connection to maybe myself, maybe my environment, maybe the people around me, maybe society, whatever it was. So I was looking for an escapism, so it was pure escape. And then I never really delved into the psyche part of why I'm doing this, because at such a young age, it just became part and parcel. It was like, there's the cheeky chappy, always sniffed up and always happy. So when you're filling yourself with a coke, you're seeing this false highs and always smiling, full of drugs, pockets full of cash, rolling with it. It became part of my identity. So people said you wear a mask. I had become this version of myself, that it wasn't a mask, it wasn't a bravado, it wasn't a persona, it was me. And then to get sober is like peeling back the weight of them experiences to find the real me. I've only really started finding my real self since I got sober. And then I've only, bit by bit, with all the collective amount of work, I did a podcast today called Love, basically. And I talk about my experience of falling in love and understanding. And I fell in love with myself only there 6 weeks ago through a Wim Hof breathing session, and to have that first time experience of love and understanding myself, and I'm human, I'm fallible, and I can fall, but I keep going. These all new feelings and emotions are new because I've blocked and suppressed it with drinking drugs for 16 years. So happiness, true happiness, being sober, love for oneself, understanding, compassion, all these things are brand new, and it's amazing.
Absolutely. How old are you now?
30.
30. So people will listen to this and either they're 30 or they're over 30 or are approaching 30. And some people might hear you say, I've only found love, as in loving myself, in the last couple of weeks with the assistance of a Wim Hof breathing session. And there might be people out there who are like, well, I don't think I love myself, or I don't know how to love myself. Or people are saying, God, that's sad that he doesn't love. It took 30 years to love yourself. Can you explain what that feeling is like? Like, how do you dissect or decipher the moment that you feel, okay, I love myself now?
Well, it was after 5 rounds of Wim Hof breathing session, and I came over and I was like, you know, you're just having a bit of a trance, I don't know if you've done it. And then I got these words came to my head, I'm unapologetically myself. And then I dissected that. What does that mean? I love myself and every single aspect of myself, pitfalls, ups, downs, the ebbs and flows of life. Where in the podcast I talk about, the one I have called Love, I was like, I knew I didn't dislike myself, I knew I liked myself, But I knew when I set goals for myself and I didn't achieve them, I liked myself a little less. I was always you're always your biggest critic, and I was like always kind of looking down to myself to a degree, and then knew it was going to fall off at some stage. Where now I'm like, yeah, I'll fall back, I'll fall down, but I'll go again. And then forget that unbelievable feeling of like, I didn't know it, I didn't love myself. I didn't know that I did not like myself. I didn't know I didn't love myself. But then when I found out I really love myself, I was like, when it comes about, and it's come about the last 2 years from, I believe it's come about from the collective amount of work with sobriety, sea swims, Wim Hofs, meditation, yoga, training, all this collective amount of work, and obviously the 12-step program is a massive foundation that it got me to the stage now where I didn't know I was missing it until I got it. And now it's like, now I'm sharing a vocal. Everyone's like, you didn't know, you don't know you don't love yourself until you love yourself and understand it.
Yes. It's like when you know, from a nutritional or a health background, you know, people will say, you don't know what health feels like until you get healthy, you know, yeah. And or you don't know how bad you felt until you get healthy in whatever capacity that might be. Do you feel lucky that you're one of the people who was able to sort of find this epiphany to get clean yourself? And I mean, I don't know, was there people in your life who would have encouraged you or told you that you needed to go get help at that time before you did, or that you did go and do that? Or were you just surrounded by people who were doing the same, so you're just in that cycle of, hey, we're all on the buzz?
Yeah, well, it's my higher power and my test of problems got me sober. Like, I always bring it back to that, because I don't like to rely on self-will or think it's all me, because that's ego-based. It was whatever came to me and got me there, but it was always me and my journey on my own. But I knew from a very young age that I had a problem. So I get them Facebook memories to come up, and I'm trying to give up alcohol since I was 19, because it's like every January, February, March, like, oh, I'm off to drink 20 days, 30 days. And that, you know, the memories on Facebook?
Yeah.
So I knew from a very young age, when the lads were getting 6 cans, I was getting 12 cans. When they were getting 12 cans, I was getting a case of cans. And then just progression. And when the lads weren't doing drugs, I was doing drugs. I found my own circle. But as you asked there, the people I was around, it was the norm. So I was hanging around with career criminals, gangsters, lunatics, and we were sniffing cocaine every day. So what they were doing, it became so normal what we were doing. Sniffing on Tuesday morning or slipping yourself to sleep and just sniffing every single day for years, and then it was like normal because everyone was doing it. It's like circling around what you see. It's just like, right, he's doing it, I'm doing it. I wasn't comparing myself because I was going to be doing it anyway. So, but the circle I was in was always on it. Like, yeah. It was mad. But it was so normal.
This is the thing that, like, you know, true speaking to people who've come from similar backgrounds as yourself and have been on and are on a similar journey, I'm learning to understand how different people's lives are and how different they were to my experiences. I had my own experiences with the session, and like where it could have gone one way or the other. But when I hear stories like sniffing on a Tuesday morning, I'm like, okay, it wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's just like, I find it like incredible that you're still here.
Oh, yeah.
I suppose, you know what I mean? That you're still here and that people are still able to completely change their lives around and be the picture of health and happiness after experiencing that. Like, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, like I was putting like probably 2,000, probably 1,500, 2,000 euros worth of coke on myself each week. Like I was like an ounce of coke, if not more, each week. I was doing like 6 bags a day, sometimes more. And that was just regular days. And then come to the weekend, it was a free-for-all. So I was through the day, normal days, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, it was like 6 bags a day. And then the weekend was like a big pile of cocaine. So I'm surprised I'm here also. And then the whiskey I was drinking was insane, like 5-6 bottles of whiskey on the weekend. And then cigarettes. My whole life was insane. I was so normal because the people I was with was doing it. And I was so, people I was with were doing it, so we always have somewhere to go, a house or a party or hotel rooms. And the session never stopped. I used to be awake for about 2.5 years. I used to be awake 3, 4, 5 days a week, no sleep. But then the worst part was insane. The worst part was I'd go home and sleep for 24 hours, wake up and do it again. No remorse, no regrets. And then I was obviously selling drugs because I had money coming in, so the money didn't exist. So it wasn't as if I was, then I obviously stopped doing everything. I was in massive debt. Because I had to work it all out. I was like, I had to write 20 people's names down. I was like, right now I owe 10 grand now, and now I'm trying to get clean. So pay that bit by bit, chipped away. But it became so normal going from hotel room and partying and staying awake for that amount of time. My body and mind was more normal, and to not feel depression, session depression, and not get a fear, it was worrying that I wasn't worried. That was so strange, to not feel anything. And people were like, do you not feel it? I was like, no, I don't feel a thing.
Mm.
But that was insane.
And were you the person at that time where, like, were you the joker of the session? Were you the guy that's like, we'll grab David because he's going to be up for it and he'll keep, like, he'll last for the 3 days or whatever? Like, where did you sit in the session?
I was full on. I was just flowing banter central, music pumping, dancing, giving it loud. I was full on. I was never stopped. I never sat down. Bottle of whiskey in one hand, a big bag of Coke in the other, and then ordering more drinks. Like, it was just copious amounts. We had a great spot. Remember the airport was a 24-hour off license that no one knew about. So when you walk through where the buses are, there's a term in when you go in the little hallway.
Yeah.
24-hour off license there. So
no way. Yeah. In an airport.
Yeah. So no we got this. So I used to have loads of money. So I used to get hand lads 300 quid. We'd go get 10 bottles of whiskey or 10 bottles of vodka. So it just never ended. So it was just constantly going and going and going for days and days and days on end. It was insane. That's where my place was in the party. I would never go home. Never.
It's actually funny when you're actually talking about it, you still kind of get a little thing. I get a thing in my stomach like, fuck. Miss those bloody days.
Yeah, it was some laugh. Like,
even though they were miserable, you know, yeah, really they're miserable, but yeah, you still have that little thing where you're like,
I'm glad I didn't.
Wouldn't mind a sesh now. Like, well, now I wouldn't mind it. Fucking hell, where are we, you know? But it's funny how, like, and again, from in my personal experience, that higher power or that sort of higher sense of being, I always have to check in with that consistently, yeah, all the time, because otherwise my ego will convince me that you could go and do that for, you do that for a couple of weeks, you'd be grand. Just do it for, have a crack. Do you know what I mean? You work really hard, Lydia. Come on, relax. Take a few days off.
That's where the
those few days will end into 6 months.
Yeah.
And I don't know where I am. I'm down the country somewhere and no one can find me. Yeah. That's where they go,
yeah,
for me.
Yeah, it's insane.
Do you know what I mean? It reminds me of my birthday with your non-cousin, Paddy Douglas. We had a barbecue at my mum and dad's house in Waterford. And 3 days later, I was in Kilkenny. With him and Kieran, who was on Fit Guru, who was on episode one. We really ended up in Kilkenny. But that's for another day. So, like, an incredible journey. And still only 30. So, like, you have the luxury now of looking forward to, like, the main chunk of your life.
Yeah, when my life only really started, like, to be honest, the program just didn't just give me a life. It started my life 2 years ago.
Mm.
Well, actually, if I keep going one day at a time, in 2 days' time, we should be 2 years sober. Yeah.
Woo! So that's a massive achievement.
Yeah, and it's all just a collection of one day at a time. And you said there, if you don't check in with your ego, so I deflate my ego every morning by doing my 12-step program. Step 6 and 7, I get in conscious contact with my higher power. I write down my defects of character. I ask them to be alleviated for the day. I get on my knees, say an attitude of gratitude, pray, or grateful for sobriety. 12-step program. This is meticulous, and really meticulous with this for the morning. My morning routine takes about an hour. I get that in conscious contact with defects of character, ask me if you're moved. I say how grateful I am for sobriety, being alive, being sober, and enable mind to think and everybody to train. And I constantly say that every morning. And I don't just recite it. I get stay like mindfulness. So I am grateful for everybody to train, enable mind to think and sobriety. And that's what I am every morning.
It's a lot hard. It's hard work, isn't it? Like, an hour is, like, you think, oh, an hour, okay, fair enough. But an hour every day at the start of your day, that's tough work. That takes commitment.
Yeah, it takes commitment, because I know, but I'd see I'm 90% on it and 10% off. And when I'm 10% off it, it's not long till 2-3 days in without me working my program, my head is gone.
Mm.
My head's gone. I'm discontented. I'm just aggressive. I'm short-tempered. I'm not in contact with my higher power, and I'm not in contact with the source, not sourced in. Like, and I can feel it straight away. And then just, I know, David, get back to the program. It works when you work it. If you don't work it, it doesn't work. Simple as. So it's worth that hour's worth doing every day.
Yeah. Amazing. So it's 2 years now that you've been doing this?
Yeah.
Wow. And you can never stop?
No, that's...
Is that the idea? This is you for life?
It reminds me in the morning. I read a certain passage in the book and it reminds me that I'm a recovered alcoholic and recovered cocaine addict. I have to get that reminder because I've heard horror stories of people. I know, actually, a woman, she was 16 years sober. She paid off her house. She got back in a relationship with her kids. She had a new car. She got on holidays all the time. 16 years sober. She got to have a handle of this. Had a few drinks. 4 years, she went back out, lost the house, lost contact with her kids. She forgot all about AA, she forgot all about the program, and was like, ego run wild, self-will run wild, and then life is just fucked up again.
Yeah, well.
So I get reminded every day, and I remind myself every day, to do this program, because I hear these horror stories, and that's why I'm still in contact with lads that are in the 12-step program, and I always, every day, a couple of days, I reach out to them, reminder, to remind me where I am, and remind me how bad it can go if we don't do this program. Like,
do you fear relapsing?
drinking drugs aren't even the last thought in my mind. They're not even a thought at all. That's where I'm at. So I work the program so I don't have to think about drinking drugs.
Yeah.
And so relapse isn't a thought in my mind. Like, there's days that can be hard. There's days that I can struggle. But that's just my headspace because I'm not doing things properly. I'm not doing it because that program can be done. And the same methods can be done, but you're just doing it, you're just reciting it and not actually being in contact with it. You're not doing it mindfully. I've done that. I've been run riot for weeks on end, doing the same things I always do, but not being in contact with it. So it doesn't mean anything when you're just reciting it. It just becomes like routine. Right? Every day now I'm like tuned in, really looking at it and really like being mindful about what I'm saying and why this practice has to be done. It's so beneficial in my life. It's given me life. That's why I respect this so much.
And then in terms of your environment now, obviously this last year has been, I would imagine, a lot easier for a lot of people who are in recovery because we haven't had the lure, I would say, of like pubs and different things or maybe sessions, you know, if you're having a league and once we're playing. Yeah. But, you know, it's been a very different year. But for you in your environment, do you have to actively, you know, say, well, I'm not going to put myself in a situation where I'm not going to be in a pub, or like, is that how it works?
I'm a barman.
Oh, sweet Jesus.
I'm a barman. Yeah, I'm a 16-year barman. Yeah.
What?
Yeah. I'm 16 years in bars. And it's funny because I was living in Swords when I got sobriety. And then 3 weeks sober, I got offered a job in Kulak and I took it. And I was only 3 weeks sober and I was rattled. My head was gone. And I started working in the bar and everyone there knew me as Dave. The fella doesn't drink. He likes hiking. I was just trying to keep my mind busy. They knew me as a new version of myself that I was trying to create at the time. So that whole new environment was creating myself. But I'm a barman, yeah. So I'm still going nights out. I'm still around situations. But now I go to bed early because I'm getting up early for the sunrise. So yeah. I didn't actively choose not to be around certain people. They just kind of fell off. I don't actively choose not to go to sessions. It's just I go home early because I'm getting up to see the sunrise or do a sunrise run. My life just kind of just progressed that way. The path just unraveled itself. I'm walking the path I want to walk.
Absolutely. So then let's talk. So you're in your 12-step program, and when was it that this sort of new love for kind of the outdoors and sea swimming and sunsets, when did that start to creep in?
25th of December 2019. Christmas Day.
No way.
Yeah, I went down to Dollymount for a swim.
The annual Christmas swim. It gets us all.
That was my first time sea swimming, and I just felt I needed to do something else because the Christmas before that were 3, 4, 5 day sessions of white Christmas, regardless if it was snowing or not. And I went down and did something different than going to the sea.
A real shock to the system, right? But, you know, it is, I think, there is no greater joy than on Christmas morning. For me, it's Tramore and Waterford, it's a beach called Tramore, in seeing people sea swimming. And that initial, the joy and the kind of fear and trepidation and the kind of the banter that's going on. Oh, it's freezing. Oh, have you got my tail? You know, like, and then seeing people getting in and running out. And then there's other people who are just head first. Like, there's such a energy and there's such life in it.
Yeah.
And that would have been where, you know, over the years, it would have been Christmas Day where I would have just seen people go swimming in winter, like, you know. And then all of a sudden, over the last couple of years, the kind of sea swimming kind of movement started happening. And I used to live in Dunleary, used to go to the 40 foot down to Sea Point, and just a new community and a new energy started to fill those areas. And to see it crop up and be more and more popular has just been incredible. And you're way more dedicated to the cause than I am. I'm only fleeting in and out. I go once every 2 or 3 weeks and I take a load of photographs and then that's it.
That's allowed. You're still doing it.
Because if you don't take a photograph, it didn't happen.
Exactly. That's what I mean.
So for you, your first dip, was it just someone bring you along? You know, were you just like, I'm going to go down?
I convinced everyone in my job, my new job, to go. I was like, right, we're going swimming Christmas morning. And all, 6 of us went down. And I just had a sense I had to do something different then.
Yeah.
I knew sea swim was calling me for some reason. And I just went down. And as soon as I went down, I loved it. And then after that, I was in the sea like 4 days a week, after 5 days a week. And then I went down to Portmarnock, then Lowrock where I met Paddy, and then back down to Portmarnock. And then I was in Portmarnock nearly every day all last summer. Nearly every day I went down, and just, we were going down like in the summertime, it was 4 a.m. for sunrise. Proper dedication, like we were down there. Oh, it was beautiful. And just it hasn't stopped. Mm-hmm. We're just all over the seashore and it hasn't stopped.
What do you think you, like, what did you fall in love with? Like, how did it make you feel?
Connected, present. Like, the way I always say to anyone if you're going to start sea swimming is the way I always do is I run as fast as I can into the water. Same way I do is life. Dive in and then you regulate your breath, your body will balance out and then you're in. I don't tippy-toe in. And what I found was I'm connected, slow down my thought process and I'm fully present and in the moment. Screaming, me and Paddy always scream, I am grateful in the water, freezing cold, regardless of what. Freezing cold, like, my body's used to it now, but I'm just screaming, I am grateful, and I'm so grateful. And the sense of community you get down there, like, people are down there healing from different types of trauma, addiction, and Port Marnock especially, when they're down them shelters, people are so open and vocal about life experiences that we can all lean each other to a degree, and we're all down there healing, breathing, through the Wim Hof for different nights, and feeling, and it's just all sharing, it's open community, no barriers, and you're out in nature talking so openly, and everyone's there, like-minded individuals, and just the whole part. The people I've met down the beach, I've become really, really close friends. Met Paddy only through Full Moon down in Lorock. Me and Paddy are real close mates now. See Paddy for 3-4 days a week, like, just meeting on the beach, just not going away, and the people I meet, and it's incredible. The whole society and environment is insane.
Do you feel like life kind of slows down a little bit when you're on the beach?
100%. It's time flies by. Me and Paddy were down there Christmas Day I was down there from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. Christmas Day. I spent 10-12 hours on the beach some days. I don't even notice. It's like, well, I have to go home. I'm supposed to eat something here. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's mad.
It's sort of like escapism in a way, right?
Well, I had this chat with Paddy. It's like, Paddy on his podcast. He's like, you're addicted to sea. I have to be very careful with addictions because I can spoil things myself by becoming addicted. So it's reconnecting to the source. It's reconnecting with our nature. So I'm not addicted to it. I use it for health benefits and for my mental health also. I'm down there because I'm in active recovery, and by being active and doing positive things, I find it's beneficial. So I wouldn't say it's an escapism. I think it's reconnecting to the real world rather than concrete buildings and 9-to-5s. It's being back involved with nature.
Yes. And do you recognise now that you're on this new journey that how important that connection is?
100%. It's an integral part of my life, sea swimming, and it's an integral part of my life being out in nature. And the benefits you get from it, not just from the community, but the people you meet, the community and people you meet, it's about back and forth. The people you meet, but the sense your body gets from being in cold water, and the time goes on, like you're in there for 3, 4, 5, 10, 15, 20 minutes, and your body really appreciates you. You're going to go off on a natural high down the beach. Mm-hmm. So it's amazing. Mm-hmm. You know yourself.
Yeah. So you're like, I mean, I don't want to sound like pretentious or whatever, like the levels of sea swimming, but like there is levels, you know, in terms of like there's people who just go in, jump in, like you're in there 30 seconds and they're out, you know what I mean? Get a picture in the tail and they're off down the beach or back into the car or whatever. But there's levels in terms of the sort of mental side of sea swimming, in that the breathing, you know, bringing in your breath work, bringing in your Wim Hof breathing, the meditation end of it, you know, the process. So for you, like you're saying with Paddy, you run down, you go straight in, and then it's like your breathing kicks in. So let's look at the breathing and the Wim Hof elements. I know that Paddy Douglas, that was in the early episodes on this podcast, that you've referenced to this podcast, has his own podcast called the DMT podcast, Do Me Think podcast.
Yeah.
Shout out Paddy Douglas. But he's also a trained Wim Hof breathing technique facilitator. That's it.
close enough,
right? So he's also administering his own kind of breath work and doing, I've done a couple of Zoom sessions with him actually, and he's fantastic. And he has a what's that website, Shane, that you can upload? SoundCloud. I like to think it's for me only, but he's for everyone. But I'm like, he sent me a little thing, but it's like a short 35-minute Wim Hof guided breathwork little thing. And every morning I do it. I wake up 6 o'clock, 35 minutes, set the clock, turn it on, get my breathwork going before I have to face the day. And if I don't do it by 5 o'clock, I'm like, I need to get under the covers. I need to go to bed because the world is just too much, which is...
That's your routine.
Again, I worry about that sometimes as well, that I should be able to handle the day with it. But it just, everything is calmer when I've done my breath work and I've assessed the day and my schedule is busy. So I like to be able to sit and think, and I'll do this, and then I'll go do the podcast, and then I'll have that meeting with Shane, and then I'll go up here, and then I'll do this. And so for you, was the introduction of Wim Hof through meeting Paddy, through being at the beach, or is it something that you wanted to kind of develop yourself?
Yeah, it was through meeting Paddy. It was, he'd only been back, I met him last March, well, May 2020. And he was talking about just being back from Wim Hof, and he was talking about starting a podcast. And I was talking about starting my podcast. And then the first time we met him, and we were so open, the connection we just made was like sparked straight away. So open and quick, and he was talking about getting into Wim Hof.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of exploded. And I've been, I think I've done about 13, maybe more plus sessions with Paddy, one-to-one guided, and then the ice baths. And oh, it's such an amazing, every time we do it, it's a different experience.
And
I got that profound feeling of that I'm unapologetic myself, and I love myself through that. Mm-hmm. I got visuals, like a DMT kind of trip. I got so many profound insights to myself by doing this. And every time it's different, but it's beneficial. And every time it's an amazing experience. It's like, you won't feel bad doing it. You'll feel nothing but good when you finish, mm-hmm. when you finish the session. And then the ice bath kicks in. And that's what brings in the ice bath, regulating your breath work when you're getting into the water. Like, I don't consciously regulate my breath anymore, get to the sea. It's part and parcel now. It's ingrained into me, so I don't have to think about slowing my breath down. It just happens naturally now.
Yeah. I remember saying to someone, I was asking me before about Wim Hof breathing and the technique and stuff, and I was like, you know, explaining it. Then I was like, and then you get into like a, basically like a bath of ice, cold water with ice in it. And they were like, you're mad to do that. And I was like, says who? And they're like, what? And I was like, says who? Who's saying that you're mad if you do that? And they were like, but like, you're getting into it. And I was like, but that's just like, and then I couldn't explain it the way I was trying to explain it. I was like, who is saying that being in a bath of ice water is wrong or is mad or is anything? You know, and also then, have you done it?
Yeah.
Oh, you've not done it, but you're going to sit there and tell me it's mad and it doesn't work and, you know, it doesn't help, there's no health benefits and blah, blah. And even if things like, you know, the Wim Hof breathing technique, which is a variant of a breathing technique that's been around since we've been breathing.
Yeah.
It's just Wim Hof has, you know, capitalized on a particular area of it and is building on his own experiences with it. But even if it doesn't work, we'll say on a physiological, psychological reality, like an actual standpoint, the placebo effect of it is enough to warrant you doing it because it makes you feel a certain type of way. Does that make sense? Have I made that sense?
Yeah, no, I understand.
Do you know what I mean? So in that placebo and nocebo, it's experiences and it's relative to the person. So whatever you do or need to do to get you to a place to be the best version of yourself, then once you're not harming anyone else or anything, then go for it.
Go for it, yeah.
Get into that bucket of ice.
Yes. I highly recommend it. Look, I'm there all the time. Like 13 sessions, yeah. Really more. Since the last 9 months, I'm always there. Like,
there is a freedom in it. When you get into that bucket of ice and you sit there and you go, I'm in a bucket of ice right now, and everyone, you know, society would tell you that this is a mental thing to do, and this is like, you're going to freeze to death, and your toes are going to fall off, and you're going to get hypothermia and all these different things. And then you sit there and your breathing starts and you realize, I'm fine, and I am conquering this, and I am now starting to actually enjoy this.
Yeah.
When you get out, you are a new person, and every time you do it, you are changing who you are as a person.
Society will always tell you not to do certain things, and they put like a tarnish it in a certain way. Mm-hmm. Don't do this, don't do that, you're mad to do this.
Yes.
I'll do whatever I want that makes me feel good.
Absolutely.
Regardless of what anyone says.
Yeah.
Once it's not infringing on anyone else.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So the that's the season. And it's funny, when you're talking about Paddy and only meeting him in March, what I was thinking when you were talking about that was that, do you feel in some way that, you know, the universe had maybe conspired?
100%.
A little bringing together, yeah, of energies, you know what I mean?
100%. Like, me and Paddy talked with this on his podcast about when we met each other. So it's funny, he goes into it, because I'm friends with Paddy's cousin, Alan. And Alan brought me down, met Paddy, I met Ray. And I'm big into cigars. And then Alan went over to talk to Paddy, and he's like, did you hear Dave's new poem? And then Paddy's like, what, he wrote a poem? And then then me and Paddy got chatting. And then he's like, yeah, does anyone want a cigar? He's like, what, do you have cigars? I was like, yeah. And then he was like, yeah, I'm thinking about starting a podcast. I was like, I'm thinking about starting a podcast. I was like, what? So I was like, what's happening here? There was poems, there was cigars, there were podcasts. And he met the fella about 5 minutes and we're like, we literally went off on our own, left everyone there. We're like, right, come over here, we'll have a chat. And we just had a chat. We didn't mean to sit beside each other about an hour. There's about 20 people there. We just peeled off and we're just all sitting there for him. It was like boom, boom, boom. It was like so funny. Like everything was like,
yeah,
the poetry, the podcast, the cigars. So sitting there smoking cigars, having a great laugh, talking about the full moon. And just we just clicked. And since then, we're just mates.
Yeah.
Just
great, and he's mates. The worst person to start a conversation with because he will actually take you 4 hours into it. You're like, literally, like, it's been 3 days now, Paddy. We should probably end up. And I've been there. I've gone for like, when we go for a pint, you know, back in the day where you could just rock for a pint and it could be like 6 hours later.
Yeah.
And funny. Then he'd be like, oh, I'll drop you home. And then he'll drop me home and he'd be sat in the car for another 6 hours.
It's funny.
I'm like, I've lost 8 stones since I've been here. I need to go eat something. Get me out of here. But that's the beauty, isn't it? Like, and I have that relationship with him as well. Where I always say we were definitely brought together for some reason. You know what I mean? And that is the beauty of. I find last year in particular, the year of lockdown and isolation, is that it has brought me closer to people. It has separated me from people who maybe I'm acknowledging or I'm believing that I need now to be away from those people because they are infringing on me being me and who I need to be to go to the next stage of my journey.
Yeah.
But it has also opened the door for new people to be brought into my life, similar mindset people that are thinking the same as me, but not thinking the same as in we are now stuck in the dogma of like the same belief system. These are people who are free thinkers. These are people who are open-minded. These are people who are allowed and will allow you to challenge their belief systems and are able to calmly talk and converse and listen and understand. And that's where I want to be because that's who I want to be.
Yeah.
Does that resonate with you?
100% exact same. The right people come into your life and people fall the wayside and not gonna, when you have a conversation with someone, they want you to believe a certain way and they just drill it into you and then you fall out. Be it family members, be it very close friends from years ago. So you're not open to any dialogue here. Like you're not open to any sort of conversation about questioning or challenging your beliefs. Like I want to be questioned to challenge all my beliefs. So then I'm going to question them, I want them to question them and then we can have a dialogue and we can come to terms. We don't have to agree on everything, but we will agree on certain things which are like one individual and like free speech. But people that are so narrow and closed off, and I've, especially with the current situation with people, family members included, and past friends, plus my Instagram hopping up with people saying certain things, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that. Like, why are you getting involved and trying to get involved in my life? I'm not involved in your life in any way. Like, if you want to have a conversation, we can have a conversation, but dive down, we choked. But the right people are around me, and they're all, then the last while, they've really come closer, like meeting yourself, Paddy, and like one individual. The right people are always sort of circulating, you kind of just, keeps kind of flowing naturally.
Yes.
It's not, it's never forced.
Well, you mentioned your Instagram and people telling you to do this and do that. We better inform our listeners who might not know.
Yeah.
You got a bit of notoriety over the last couple of weeks.
The infamous sea swimmer.
The infamous sea swimmer. I literally, someone was asking me, who's on your podcast today? I was like, oh, I have this wonderful poet. His name is David Patrick Fye. He does fantastic work. And they were like, I don't know him. And then I was like, yeah, he was arrested on Port Marnock Beach for sea swimmer. Oh, the sea swimmer with the video. I love brilliant. Him. He's brilliant. I'm like, yes, he's on the podcast today.
It's funny. I got notoriety after that. And so my checkered past, I'd been arrested a few times years ago because I was drink drugs, whatever.
Yes.
So the arrest part didn't bother me because it was cool, calm, collected. Everyone can see in the video. Gandhi approach, set in silence. And that didn't bother me. The biggest part that kind of messed in my head was my phone. The day after that, when I put the video up, my phone did not stop. Like I got 2,000 new followers on Instagram and 2,000 individual messages. And that was from people I didn't know.
Yeah.
And the people I do know then, in my normal life, they all wanted to know the situation. So I gave all my energy of trying to give a genuine response to everyone. And I'm big for voice notes. I don't really text. So I was voice notes. I was like, I'm about 600 voice notes in here, 600 individual people. I was like, my head burnt out. And I was just like, oh my God, my head was fried.
Of course.
Turned my phone off for like 2 days. I was like, get that away from me. It was like, I was trying to be genuine and trying to get people to respond and pouring energy into it. It was like, then I just did a video saying, thanks for response. Like, it was mental. Like, in 3 days, 2,000 new followers, and I was like, what happened here?
So let's explain for anyone who didn't see the video, because where have you been? but the video is you in Port Marnock shelters.
Yeah.
C- kitted out in your dry robe. Sponsorship, hello.
That's what I was waiting for. Yeah, need to be sponsored.
So you're sitting there and there's a couple of guards, and how did it happen? Let's explain what happened and then we'll discuss it. So how did it come to the guards surrounding you and you being like, what's going on here?
The week before, we were down there and I'm down there every single Saturday for the last 2 years. I'm down there Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 4 days a week, and I'm down Port Marnock. Always there. And so the week before I got arrested, the guards had a process, two guards. Mm-hmm. They singled me out. I just had one of them heads, whatever it is. And I just ran. I just have one of them faces.
You do have one of them
faces. I have one of them faces. He's a bold boy. I mean, go talk to him. He's mischievous. And so they approached me and they said, what's going on? What are you down here for? And I said, see someone down there for mental health. And the guy's like, we all have our mental health issues. We're just getting on with it. I was like, well, that's some answer. He's like, he's leaving. I said, yeah, I'm about to run. I'm about to swim. And I said, I'm going anyway. So we're leaving. That was the week before. Then the week after I went down, it was raining. And the beach was very quiet. There was 20 people there. And the people I was with were running. I wasn't, because I was injured. So I sat down where I was sitting in the video. And the guards approached me and they asked me name and address. And they said, they came and approached me and he was like, oh, it's our mate from last week. So he knew who he was. Sorry, I forgot to say, the week before I gave my name and address. So they knew me. And so then the week of getting arrested, they approached me. He's like, oh, it's our mate from last week. And I was like, they're looking for a reaction. So they were poking and prodding. And I wasn't getting an altercation. So I sat silent. My approach was, I'm down there, see, I'm doing nothing wrong. I don't need to engage these people. I'm sitting in a public area. I just didn't recognise him as any sort of authority over me because I'm just living freely. So I was just sitting there peacefully and they're like, right, what's your name and address? Set in silence. I'm going to get my sergeant. They went and got the sergeant. Next of all, he came over. And next of all, there's four guards standing around me. You can see in the video. I'm sitting there drinking a cup of tea, staring into the sea. Cool, calm, collected. All I'm down there for is to run, swim, smile, laugh, dance with my friends and the community that I've been involved in. And they just kept reciting, give your name and address, and then I just did set in silence. I wasn't getting involved, because every time we get involved with guards, they twist, they turn in a certain way, and they would provoke it in a way where they would get a response out of you, a response I didn't want to give, be it aggression or no aggression. I didn't want to give them any response. So the best approach for me, I thought, was sit in silence. So I sat there in silence, and then he said, we're arresting you under the COVID legislation, and then he grabbed me by the wrist, and then Paddy had recorded the whole thing, another friend of mine, Connor, recorded the whole thing. So there's witnesses there. They brought me from there up to the car. Two guards got in. They brought me to Swords Garda Station. They asked my name and address. I said, I want my solicitor present. I don't understand the process. I was just on the beach. I said, I don't know why I was arrested for. I want my solicitor present. Then there was like eight of them surrounding me in the guard station. They were all on the height because I wasn't complying to what they wanted to be complying. I said, why am I arrested for? I said, I don't understand this. I want my solicitor present. They were all bullying, like red in the face. Then they brought me into the cell, strip search. And then I was in there for 2 hours. I said, I want my solicitor. Brought me back out, put handcuffs on me, charged me with not giving my name and address when asked, and not complying with COVID legislation. Brought me in the back of a paddy wagon, or Mariah van, to the CCJ, and I was in lockup then for 5.5 hours on my own. And then they brought me to another lockup, where I was in lockup for a half an hour with 500 individuals. Two were for murder, one was for a drugs charge, and one fellow was in a psychosis. It was maybe a drug psychosis or actually psychotic, but he was covered in blood. And the lads were like, what are you arrested for? And I was like, see someone. Like, no, you're obviously up for murder, because they were for murder. And they were like laughing. I was like, no, I'm genuinely up for a see someone. And like, no way. Like, and I was like, it was insane. I'm in a cell with murderers and a lad of psychosis covered in blood and another fellow for a drug charge. And they were just going, we all having a laugh about it. I was like, yeah, see someone. It was 8.5 hours locked up at stage. They brought me in then to the CCJ, the main court. The judge was like, what's your name? Give me a name and address then. And then they said, would you have legal representation? I said, no, I'd like some. I said, it's too late in the day for legal representation. You have to get them the next day. And he said, they asked the guard to arrest me, which happened to be the sergeant of guard station of sorts. Any conditions to his bail? Do you have any objections? There's like, no objections to his bail, but there's a condition that he's banned Port Marnock Beach. And so I was like, right, what? Like, then I was like, do you understand the bail? And he says, yeah, 8.5 hours being locked up. And I've starved and eaten the day before as well. So that was done, walked outside, did a video saying this was arrested for. And that's exactly how the day went.
Wow.
Yeah, it was a mad long day, starving as well.
Do you know what? Hearing you recall that is actually so upsetting.
Yeah, it's insane. It's insane.
It's so sad to, like, for that, this to now be a reality, that this is a thing, that you can be put into that situation by just see someone in a public space.
Same.
In fresh air.
Yeah.
You know?
It's Nazi Germany. Where are you going? Is that essential? It's essential. My sea swim is essential to me. Anything anyone wants to do is essential. I'm not down there, I'm not drinking, I'm not drugging, I'm not causing any harm, just sea swimming. They're trying to bring up this 5K legislation, which doesn't really, there's too many grey areas into what's essential, what's not essential. So my solicitor's happy to take the case on board. They know there's so many grey areas of this that they're willing to proceed. And I'm like one of the first people in Ireland to be arrested over this. So my solicitor's like, right, we're going to follow up on this. Like, there's so many things here, that loopholes and grey areas, that they're happy to take the case on. And like, I was in court today. I was in this suit.
I was just saying, is this suit for me?
Yeah. I was in court this morning before I came here. Like, it's for you also.
Thanks.
But like, it's mad, this situation. Like, if you want to go see swimming, the 5K legislation, if you're not infringing anyone else, you're not doing any harm, do whatever you want to do. Live your life freely. See, run, do whatever you want, swim, do whatever you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
I believe.
Well, the thing is about the video is, like, there's, you know, so many people that are surrounding you.
Yeah.
So I think that was the comments on the video were like, well, what about the rest of the people that are there? Like, why aren't they being arrested? Why was it only you?
Singled out.
Singled out. But can I play the devil's advocate?
Of course.
There's a lot of people saying if he had just given his name.
Yeah.
They wouldn't have done that. So how do you feel about that? Like, if you would just say, look, I told you last week, here's my name. This is... Do you feel that that wouldn't have made a difference?
Because I gave my name and address the week before, and when they seen me, there was like 20 people at the beach. They knew me from the week before. They saw me from that week I got arrested. They came straight over to me, even though they knew my name and address.
Mm-hmm.
They knew the reason why I was going there swimming, because I told them the week before. They knew, they don't know, they just wanted to single me out, even though they knew it was. They knew my name. They knew what the reason I was down there for. I explained down there for my mental health reasons and swimming.
Mm-hmm.
Why would they then proceed to come over and antagonise and try bully tactics me and try again to engage with me? So I felt like, well, you've already have this information. We're going to go through this again. So I was just like, now you're trying to intimidate me in a way where I'm just down doing what I'm doing, which it wasn't intimidating, but that's what they're trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I was just sitting there, she sees someone. There's no need for them to come over to me. And the amount of things that are going on in the world or whatever you want to talk about in Ireland, and they're literally going out of their way to walk down to Port Marnock Beach, to a beach, mm-hmm. where people are swimming in the lashings of rain that day, to arrest a man that's going swimming. Why should I give my name and address when all I'm doing is going into nature to swim?
Mm-hmm.
That's the way I look at it.
I agree with you. I'm trying. I agree with you, but yeah, I'm trying to play devil's advocate.
Yeah, go for it.
I can't. I don't really know. I'm trying to, because I'm trying to you know, be balanced. If someone is listening, and for somebody who's like, no, yeah. The 5K is there for a reason, and we're not meant. You know, we're all trying to get you this together, and I'm trying to play devil's advocate, but I can't because it goes against my heart, and that is being honest. You know, and also the fact that we know people are breaking the 5K limit.
Oh, it's funny because...
Every day.
Yeah, there's a guy giving me grief on Insta, and I know I know his barber, and he's going to his barber like once a week, and he's giving me grief about going outside of 5K, and people are going to get their nails done, their hair done, and I know these girls. And one girl came onto my Instagram, and I didn't reply to any comments in the video. The video got like 600 comments. She put up a comment about something about, do you think your mental health is more important than mine? Whoa, we're talking about a victim card, and she just got lambasted about 200 messages top of that. I'm above that to engage with pettiness of the thread. But the thread was insane. I was just, people were like, do you think, no, my mental health is not more important than yours. My mental health is important to me. I look after me.
Yes. Well, we can only control ourselves and we're only responsible for ourselves. But like we were saying before we start recording, we are going into this 1 year now. We are happy anniversary. We have been in prison for 1 year, and that is what it is.
2 weeks to flatten the curve.
Listen, we are one goddamn year. We don't know when it's going to end. We don't know. There is no direction whatsoever with our government. Zero COVID approach is, from my virology background, I will tell you. It is not. That does not make sense. We are moving into an endemic. It is not a pandemic. COVID is going to be around for probably ever, like the flu and like all these other things. Not saying, don't at me. I'm not saying, you know, it's only the flu, it's only a cold. Like, I'm not a scientist. You know, I'm not coming here from a scientific background, but we have to start looking out for ourselves now, and we have to start protecting the people in our communities that are most vulnerable, not only from COVID-19, but we're starting to see, you know, cases of suicide rising. We're seeing domestic violence rising. You know, the approach of the 5K, the approach of not taking mental health into consideration for breaking the 5K or the COVID legislation, that has to be looked at, because our young people are suffering. Our young people are dying at the hands of themselves, at the hands of drug, of addiction, of alcohol. And it is, you know, we are saving people, quote unquote, from COVID-19, but at the price of what?
100%. And you asked earlier on, is it different now to the situation with relapse and stuff like that? Because I'm in the loop, that's the other things with 12 steps. people are reaching out to me through, they're looking at the poems or listening to my podcast, mm-hmm. and they're like, relapses are on the up. I know friends yes. of mine have relapsed. Friends of mine have died with overdoses. A friend of mine died last November from an overdose. A woman reached out to me recently. She's living with an addict and domestic abuse. And these things that are, for me, in my mind, are much bigger than the COVID situation. Mm-hmm. When you're locked up with an addict and they're domestically abusing you, when you're relapsing and you're taking their life and you're suicidal, you only get a certain amount of years on this planet. This way I look at it, 85, maybe say years. I'm going to live forever, though. And there's no stopping me. But my life has been on, well, my life hasn't, but people's lives have been on hold for a year if they're complying with these legislation rules. I'm going to go out and say it. Don't comply to these rules. Live your life. Do whatever you want that makes you happy, keeps you sane. If don't infringe on people, don't if you're causing anyone harm, don't do that. Just do what's best for you. And that's for me, is swimming. But relapses, drink, drugs, domestic abuse, these are way more important than this COVID situation. I'm not saying COVID's not real. It is. People are susceptible to it. Elderly are more susceptible to it. Let them cocoon. I will actively bring you your shopping. I will actively do this for you and people in my society that are vulnerable. Mm-hmm. But tyranny and oppression is locking up people that are healthy, trying to lock up people that are healthy. I will not be locked up in my mind, body or soul. Mm-hmm. I'm free to do all them things. I'm saying to everyone else, be free, live your life, don't comply to all these situations.
We also have a duty of care as adults in society for our youth and for the children that are coming up. I don't have children, but my heart is broke for children in my community. And my seeing children in mass, seeing children terrified, walking to school, not filled with joy, not laughing, not playing, like living with fearing something, you know, essentially fearing. I'm not going to say like the boogeyman or something that doesn't exist, okay? Because we're not debating that at all. But it's the impact that this is having, and no sort of, you know, strategy on how to implement, a safe landing space sort of for kids in escaping this. Do you know what I mean? And like, what are we going to do? It's a year now where, you know, our lives have completely been turned upside down, and people need a little bit of hope, I feel, and they need a little bit of inspiration and guidance and clarity, and we're not getting that. So that's where the taking responsibility for yourself and being responsible for your own actions, you know. And we're probably lucky because we're able to get that solace in the good things in life, like sea swimming, like creativity, like sobriety. Haven't drank since Christmas. Hello.
Good going.
And you know, like, and I'd done my 3-4 years where I didn't drink and went back on it. The one glass of wine on the Sunday, yeah. Pint of Guinness at the bar, you know yourself. And got to lockdown, and then it was like, fuck it. What else am I going to do?
Yeah,
I'm in this gaff. It's 4 o'clock. Everything's done. The house is clean. I'm going to open that bottle of wine. And then 7 o'clock. Boom.
Yeah.
Bawling and crying down the phone. What's happening? Where are my friends? And then, you know, I was like, right, I need to give this a break, and got to Christmas. It's like, right, let my hair down. It's Christmas. Be with my family and everything. And then I just went New Year's Day. Boom. There was too much happening. The world... There was, you know, people in my life that were friendships that people I've known since I'm 10, 11, 12 that were like, your views.
Oh, yeah.
You're not taking this seriously. Your views are infringing my views. I can't be around you anymore. I'm like, you're my family, but that's okay. We go in love, and like, I'm going to do me, you do you. And all the world was just chaotic. And there was lots of stuff going on. And I said, I can't do this while having a hangover, and I can't do this while not feeling great because I've had 2 glasses of wine. So I was like, boom, that's it. And I'm not saying that I'm not going to drink again in a couple of weeks, because I might, but as of right now, life is better.
In my poem I wrote, in one of my poems, it's like, born free, live free, die free, stop trying to strip back my liberty. And that's what it's about for each individual. I think, do whatever you want.
Very quickly, Final part before we wrap up. We have to talk about the poetry. It's the reason you're here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the poetry.
The poetry is the reason you're here. Not just you getting arrested for these women, you know?
The poetry, yeah. Yeah, no, I love the poetry. Started last March, and that's just skyrocketed since then. I'm out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Spoken more poetry.
Have you always been a creative writer?
No.
Where has this come from?
when I shaved my head, I swear to God, my head shaved, and then
a divine intervention.
It was divine intervention. I met him off. I went in and wrote a poem, and then I read it, recited it to a friend. He's like, share that. I shared it, and it got like 1,000 views in a day. And then a week later, I did another poem. I've been just writing poems ever since, just constantly flowing with poetry. It's just the weight of the hair kind of stopped the path of any thinking.
Is it kind of, because you're not only are you writing them, but you're delivering them as well, which I think is a very important aspect of them, because I mean, a lot of people can write, but it's the delivery of that poetry or the spoken words. Is that equally as important to you, that, you know?
Because everyone's got back to me, the input I've got is they can feel the real, the rawness, the connection, because it's all memories. It's all true. The addiction, the ones about on the session, the drug addictions, the coke, the violence, the insanity, the crime, all the stuff that was involved in that could have went bad, it's all real. And people can say they can hear it and feel it. And now it's my experiences that are getting a real connection. I mean, I'm really connected when I'm saying, because it's all real.
Yes.
It's not, none of it's fabricated, like, so.
Yeah. Is that, is there some kind of, you know, biographical?
It's in my blood.
There's some kind of biological standpoint that come from your biographical kind of aspect to it, where it's sort of like a diary of, you know, the mind or your mind.
It's people always ask me, like, does it take long? And I'm dead serious. It takes me about, I write it and recite it. There's very minimal editing. It's just like 10 minutes and I'm done. And I don't even, it's no thought process, really. It's just like, pen comes out, I lash it out, and then it's like, I recorded it straight away. And there's some now, I did my mama poem and I had to put some thought into that. And there's some that I do edit, but most of the time it's just like, boom, boom, boom. Where did that come from? And then it's just like, peace.
Well, that's very interesting, because I remember Damien Dempsey once being asked about when, you know, some of his more deeper songs or the deeper writing, and someone had, a journalist had asked him, you know, where does that come from? And he had answered, my ancestors. And he said, when I start writing and pick up that pen, I feel like they flow through me.
Yeah,
so in that, you know, would that resonate with you? That do you feel like there's, again, you're connecting with something higher than yourself?
I think from the 12-step program, when I did my step four and I had to write about my inventory of life, there's no, like, you can lie. I'm not a lawyer, but when you talk, you can manipulate things or justify things. Pen comes into your hand, it's in front of you, it's only true. You're pouring out everything real. You're looking back, everything's just raw, real, and true. There's no escaping the pen. You're looking right at it and you're just looking at everything that's there in front of you. It's true, like, it's just, there's no escaping it. It's just like, whatever happens to the pen goes in your hand, it just flows.
Yeah.
Natural.
Can you recite a little something before we let you go?
I can't. I never recite any of my poems. I don't remember any of my poems. I have poems with me I can recite, but I never, I don't memorize them.
Can you read one out?
I can read one out if you
want. Yeah, that's what I don't care if you bring in a mariachi band. Forget it done. It's called If You Can Do A Bit, Do A Bit.
Right. I always carry my poetry book with me.
Can we get a little team tune or something every week? Or like,
what one will I read now?
How exciting.
Right. They're long now.
That's okay. We can go a couple of minutes.
Right.
Well, I mean, don't go. We don't have seven
an hour.
Beating, you know, half a fool's cap page here.
I'll read a sort of small bit of it, right? We'll get one going called Divinely Intertwined.
Beautiful.
Right.
Are you a Capricorn?
Oh, I am an Aries. Yeah, I always ask people the stars ones.
I fucking knew. I actually, the reason I changed to Capricorn was I was like, I bet she's a Capricorn. I was going to say Aries. Bollocks! Trust your gut. Shit.
Right, so this is called Divinely Intertwined. A really small starter, right? It goes this. Good morning. Hey, guys. Thanks for tuning in. What a load of bollocks. Put that noise in the bin. Up to 1 million followers. Thanks for the ad. New products, fake lifestyles. Always happy, but never sad. Look at me, look at this, buy that. Designer clothes and labels prompting and promoting. They don't care about you, just keep sending likes and voting. This existence they're portraying isn't living. Their face in the camera, showing you the picture-perfect vision. Influencer? What? Influence is what? Influencing susceptible minds who can't read between the lines. Consume this product, drape yourself in this brand. Spend all their money. Oh, and here's some pictures of me in the sand. Help out influencing people to be more thought-provoking. And a little less talking about yourself. It's revolting. Use your stage to send a message of love. Love for oneself. A social media hug.
Oh, wow.
Thanks.
Amazing. That was brilliant.
Thank you very much.
That is really, really good. Well done.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Yeah, that was really good. That was a lovely, lovely outro to our podcast. Thank you so much for coming in. I really appreciate
it. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate being last on.
Did you enjoy it?
I really did enjoy it.
Good, good, good. We'll have to get you back. We need a part two. We need a follow up to what's going to happen.
Yeah, you follow up.
We're live from Mountjoy with
Well, I'm actually out on bail at the minute, not that.
Oh my God. I'm harbouring a criminal.
Yeah, I'm out on bail. I'm actually banned from Port Marnie Beach and out on bail. And if I break bail conditions by going to Port Marnie Beach, I could end up on remand and then go to Clover Hill. Genuinely.
This is insane. Yeah, this is nuts.
I'll end up with Paddy Duggan said the last time about ending the podcast. Didn't even touch on psychedelics tonight. That's another big mess.
Oh, well, listen. Well, maybe we get two of you back in. Although, yeah. I don't know if that's wise. We won't get a word in edgeways.
Yeah,
right. But, no, you'll have to come back in. And look, I hope this all pans out. Hopefully, you know, there is some, I don't know what you even say. Like, it just seems so... Hopefully it will be all thrown out.
Yeah.
And this will all be a kind of distant past for you, or just a memory for
massive
you.
Massive celebration to Port Marnie Beach when I'm back down there. I'm home, finally.
But listen, thank you so much for coming in. I really appreciate it. And thanks for the little piece.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me recited.
David Patrick Farrell for the First Exchange Podcast.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.